Welcome to the 2023 Virtual Region Convention and to our tools session. Our first speaker is Kimberly. Thank you, Kimberly.
Thank you, Melissa. I'm Kimberly. I'm a compulsive overeater in the Hartford, Connecticut area of the U.S. I've been in OA for 35 years and 10 months. I've been abstinent for 35 and a half years, and I'm gratefully maintaining a healthy body weight and a weight loss of 65 pounds for 35 years. And I'm very happy to be here today. I like to say that the house of my recovery, that my recovery is like a house, I guess. So the foundation of my house of recovery is the AA Big Book. And the walls are the OA 12 and 12. The handrails are the tools. And the house rules, so we all get along, are the traditions using both the OA and the AA 12 and 12s. And the roof of my house is my higher power. I need all of them to live a happy, meaningful, recovered life. So the steps and the tools all have these spiritual principles, and this session is on the principle of anonymity and practicing the principles, and of course, the tool. But first I want to start with one more important fact about my recovery and something that's very important for me, quoting out of the For Today book. On January 10th, it says, the steps are the program of recovery in its entirety. Everything else is intended to support that process. So anonymity is one of the things that supports my step process and my recovery. It's so important that it's one of our 9 tools. It has 2 traditions. And it's in our name. As a beginner in 1986, what anonymity meant to me was I didn't tell anyone you were in OA, and you didn't tell anyone I was here, and I almost didn't tell anybody I was here. What that meant to me was it was safe to open up and be real in the meetings, and it allowed me to get a beginning in recovery. Both the AA and OA 12 and 12s tells us that anonymity is the spiritual foundation of our traditions. Tradition 11 says first that anonymity is about attraction rather than promotion. There's a fine line between letting people know OA exists and advertising it like a commercial for a weight loss program or a used car dealership. Second, anonymity assures us that I, as an individual, have the right to tell people I'm in OA or not. And then the third thing about anonymity is that I never allow my face or last names to be used if I identify myself as an OA member in the press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And Tradition 12 reminds us to place principles before personalities. So what does all of this mean when I take it out of the book and put it into my life? First of all, I think it's about letting go of my personal motives and beliefs and focus on the principles. And principles, I think I would define as the key ideas of the steps and the traditions. For me, one of the danger areas in doing service above the group level is that I do sometimes have good intentions. And, well, hopefully I always have good intentions, but there's a thin line between good intentions and personal motives. So, to help me with that, I have these principles behind the steps, traditions, and concepts. So a few things that I pulled out to talk to you about was, first of all, putting principles before personalities. And this makes me think of tradition five. And tradition five says, my primary purpose is to carry the message to compulsive overeaters who still suffer. That's the principle. And it doesn't matter about the personalities. It doesn't matter if you like the political figure that I don't care for. It doesn't matter if you and I disagree on important things that will be discussed at World Service. Those opinions are part of our personalities. What matters is that we are all food addicts, compulsive eaters, dieters, purgers, starvers. And it makes me think, if I was in a boat wreck and I was out at sea clinging to a life preserver and a Navy boat came to save me, I really wouldn't care what their personality was. I wouldn't care who they voted for. I would care that they throw the rope in the water for me to grab onto. And that's what putting principles before personalities means. It also, anonymity in the, as the books tell us, means that I can tell anybody I want to that I'm an OA. For many years at work, I told virtually no one. I told maybe three people in 29 years. And then in my last year at work, one day we were new on Zoom in the pandemic. My boss asked us all to share on what our favorite book was. And I was going to pick some self-help book because of my dang darn anonymity. And the voice said, no, that's a lie. And one of our principles is honesty, and I try not to lie. So when it was my turn, I told everybody that my favorite book was the AA Big Book, and I told them why. And it turned out to be the opposite of what I was scared of. Mostly, people didn't care all that much. They really didn't care. Except this one guy, he almost jumped through the Zoom screen to give me a hug because he was a recovered alcoholic who kept his anonymity very close. And it allowed him to be honest about his favorite book. So there's for not telling anybody I'm in OA. Today I tell my neighbors, I'm trying to be me and let people know what I do with my time. However, I do not tell anyone that you are in OA. If I see you in public, I may or may not speak to you. I'll look at you and get a gauge if you want to talk, if you're with people. And if they ask me how I know you, I'm going to probably say you're a friend of a friend. I'm not going to say I know you from the Wednesday night meeting or the Zoom meeting. The next thing about anonymity is not identifying myself by name or face in public media of communication. And I'll give you a couple of examples of how that works or doesn't work. Many years ago, in a previous intergroup, we decided we wanted to create some OA testimonials to put them on our website. And to put these videos on our website, they had to be on a popular video sharing platform. Not MyTube, but the other tube, right? And that meant they were out there in the public for people to see. So we were very careful to not use our faces or names or last names. And but maybe somebody could have recognized us by our voice or by our before pictures. My before pictures were blocked off, were blurred off. But we tried to adhere to the principle of anonymity. Then later came social media. And in social media, and I'll give one example, is on Facebook. I thought, since everybody that saw my comments on Facebook were my friends, that I could post about OA. And I shared one time on my anniversary. And some friends told me that maybe, some OA friends told me maybe that was a violation of anonymity. And in talking with someone I found who actually was when a group of OA people were at lunch one day at World Service, we were talking about it, and the waiter came to
the table.
Gentle
reminder.
And we asked him, and it turns out he was a media specialist, and he said that was a violation, but I'm going to run out of time. So I want to talk about a couple things. One is the difference between attraction and promotion. And the AA 12 and 12 gives a great example, the example of a political campaign. A political party wants to win. So promotion is about me. I want to win. It's me, me, me. And even in OA, if I'm talking only about me and not about criticizing anyone, that is so dangerous to my ego. And that is not what OA is about. It's not about winning. It's about giving people hope and letting them know that recovery is there. And that's what attraction is. It comes out of gratitude and humility. The AA 12 and 12 also talks about personal restraint. And I love that because I'm an addict, and personal restraint is not a symptom of recovery. I mean, personal restraint is a symptom of recovery, not my disease. And I like this idea that it's just not about me. So I will close with a couple things. One, something about anonymity is closely aligned with humility. And in our new step, I mean, our new tradition workbook, it asks a question about what are the pitfalls of being put on a pedestal. In step tradition 12, and the danger of being on a pedestal. I love being on a pedestal, right? I like being the center of attention most of the time, not all the time, but you know, pedestals are slippery places. And if I allow myself or put myself on a pedestal, the danger is that it's way too easy to fall off. And fall away from recovery. So the other thing I wanted to share was that I think it's very important to study each of the traditions and think about how they apply to me, not only in OA, but also in my personal life. And if I think about anonymity, it gets to humility. It gets to acceptance and trust, being willing to be a bozo on the bus, doing my part, but not having to be on stage or not having to be in the starring role. I guess that's as good an analogy as any. To close on is the principle of anonymity allows me to be just a member, a functioning member of society, and a member of the group, and belong. Before OA, I never felt like I belonged. In my disease, I was often the fattest person I saw on any day. I never felt like I belonged. But because of the tool and the principles of anonymity, I really do get a chance to be one among many in OA. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Kimberly. And our second speaker is Amy.
Thank you so much. I am Amy, and I am a compulsive overeater and a food addict. And I have been in program since 1988 and been abstinent the whole time. I've had various weight gains and weight losses, some for great reasons. I have 5 children, and some because of menopause and illness. And but I am grateful to be, you know, back near goal weight and, you know, loving how the program works. So, Kimberly really covered so beautifully just how important this tradition and tool is. In fact, it's so important that it's both a tradition and a tool. And, you know, I'm in total agreement that, you know, the steps are where it's at and the tools are a way of working the steps. And if we're not working the tools, there's a big question as to what is actually being built. And so, you know, we continue to carry on with this. So I came into program a long time ago, and, you know, when I came, there were only AA literature, just like what Kimberly was saying. And I came in the year before, actually, and spent the whole time going, I don't know what these people are about. I don't know what, like, just don't know. So I went out, did some more research, and came back the following year. And when I came back, I basically told myself that I would work the program. I would work all the steps and all the tools, and I would get a sponsor, and I would go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and I would make all the phone calls, and on and on. I would do everything, and my goal was to prove that the program didn't work so that I could leave with a good, clear conscience. Well, here I sit 34 and a half years later, and as long as I keep doing the things, it works just fine. So I'm glad that for once my, you know, being smart, I managed to outsmart myself. And so one of the things I told myself that first time when I was coming back to program was that every time I knew that I had spent a lot of time the year before figuring out how I was different than everybody in the room, how what they had to say did not apply to me. And so I made a little agreement with myself that every time somebody spoke up, I would look for the way in which I was the same, the way in which I had commonality with that person. And I later came to find that I was accidentally practicing anonymity, that to be the same, to believe that everybody else has something of value to offer to me, and the other way around, that I have something of value to offer, is to come to a place of humility. And it's in the second edition of the OA 12 Steps and 12 Traditions in the back. It says, do we value all OA members equally, or do we give some individuals special status? And what I was doing was valuing everybody equally, including myself. And it was a huge change for me. So I have thought long and hard about anonymity, particularly in the last few years, as I am a member of, you know, a marriage that contains two OA members. And my husband has a very different relationship with how to share in meetings and how he copes with crisis than I do. And we've had a number of crises involving children and hospitals and scary stuff. And my best way of dealing with a crisis is to get very quiet inside and get busy doing the things that need to be done in figuring out the next pieces of the crisis. I know I have feelings. I have a lot of them. They're confusing. They're big. And they interfere with my being functional. So I am functional and I wait for the feelings to have time and place to show up. I am not suppressing them. I'm working the world the way it works best for me. My husband feels the pressure of feelings, and one of his best ways to deal with it is to go to meetings, express it, and that takes the pressure off, and then he goes forward and he's functional. So we have both been in program for a long time. He's been in program longer than I have. And what happens a lot is that on meetings where people know me, they take his information that he just shared and they reach out to me. And you can all see that this is one of those tricky places. Technically, they're breaking my anonymity. I didn't share that information, but they mean well, and they love me, and they love him. And so I just offer that to you all. And I haven't quite figured it out myself how to deal with it when it happened recently. I just texted them back and said, thank you very much, and let it go. And didn't have long phone conversations to protect my own way of dealing with the world. But I know of another couple in OA where, I'm not sure they were ready to recover, but they both ended up leaving program because when, the one person walked into a meeting, they were asked, how is the other person? And vice versa. And they decided that was an anonymity break that they couldn't live with. So I just offer to you that you want to be so tender, that this really is about protecting other people and making them feel safe and able to recover. And you never know, some people think my way of dealing with my own crises is a little too much, but it works for me. And so I have to be respectful of myself. That is what works for me, is that I will deal in the future with the emotions of the crisis. But today, they're just right over there, a little basket with a lid on. And so that is, I just offer it to you all. So we're protecting other people in the way that they want to be protected. I'm protecting myself with anonymity. And that's more about, making sure that I'm not puffed up. Oh, I've been in program since such and such, and therefore you ought to listen to me.
Gentle reminder. Well,
thank you. I've lost such and such, therefore you ought to listen to me. If there's any ego or me about it, I'm probably not in alignment with anonymity. And I watch, folks out there who have a much bigger media presence than I do, and I see anonymity breaks. And it is perfectly okay for big person A, B, or C to say, I have X amount of sobriety. However, the minute they mention the name of the program, that's when they're in problem. So, it's a slippery slope, but it puts them at personal danger, personal risk. When their lives aren't working as well and they step out and people are like, but you said, and then it speaks poorly for the program. And so we want to protect, you know, others. We want to protect ourselves, and we want to protect our program, because I am not going to be a shining star for OA every single moment of my existence. Because last time I looked, I was a person. And human beings are just going to people. And, you know, that's just the truth. We are so human, and we are protecting our program from our own individual humanity and our mistake making. So, and we need to, as, you know, Kimberly so eloquently talked about, that we are a program of attraction, not promotion. However, we are not a secret society. So when, you know, somebody who lives across town from me has their moment of despair where they are ready to come into OA, they have to know it exists. And so we always have to find ways to make sure that our program is available to the still suffering compulsive overeater. And we need to figure out a way, you know, in this modern age, to decouple our individual stories and yet still have the name and what we do out there, so that when the time comes, that person, that newcomer that we desperately want to join us, can do so. So I think I will go ahead and stop there. And thank you very much for letting me share.
Amy, thank you so much. The first question that we had, I've already answered in the question and answer box. Someone asked if the Traditions Workbook is now available, and I went to OA.org bookstore and found the link and sent it to her. It is indeed available in hard copy and electronically from OA.org. So that is the answer to the first question. Any suggestions regarding Zoom meetings, the after meeting, the parking lot, when people start sharing about people who were in the discussion that day or the day before, but gossiping in a loving and caring way? Any idea how to handle that? Kimberly?
I guess if I were uncomfortable in the parking lot, I'd get in the car and go home. Whether it was a, you know, concrete parking lot or the virtual after the Zoom meeting parking lot, I might speak up if I really thought somebody was speaking out of turn. There's a line between respecting anonymity and asking others to respect anonymity and controlling. And I tend to have a strong opinion of my opinion, and I have to just be careful to remember that there's a fine line between trying to control the situation and trying to speak up for the traditions. And I think that requires a lot of humility and a little bit of courage and asking God for guidance.
Thank you. Kimberly, Amy?
I agree with everything Kimberly said. And, you know, it is hard in those free-flowing moments to step in without sounding like a know-it-all. And so sometimes the best way is to bring it back to a group conscience, or to take a group inventory, you know, or to talk to people privately, one-on-one later. It all depends on the level of discomfort and, like, is it a one-time thing? But if it's become part of the group dynamic, lots of times people are new and they just don't know any better. So they do actually need a little assistance to know, like, this is different than standing outside your kid's preschool.
Kimberly.
I absolutely agree. That's a great way of looking at it. And if I can handle it with easy does it approach rather than a heavy does it approach, like, boy, what this would be a case study, or this would be a great topic in a meeting on anonymity, or to figure out how we talk about, right? And to just assume that maybe people just don't know. Because it is really, you know, if I saw somebody after the meeting and you, it's the four of us were in a meeting together, and I don't know, we'll pick on me. I look like I had the flu and I was really off topic in the meeting. For the two of you to say, boy, it sounds like Kimberly could use some phone calls. We were all in the meeting. That, right? That's a case study of absolutely. But you know, what the hell was the matter with Kimberly? Now that starts to feel gossipy, and yet it could be the same question, and just how we come together makes a big difference.
Yeah. And language is important. Yes.
The other thing I'm realizing neither Kimberly nor I mentioned was the exception to the anonymity rule. There is in all the literature, no matter which program you're looking at, an exception, which is we do not keep each other's anonymity in cases where it will kill the other person. So if you know somebody is in hideous relapse, it actually is not a break of anonymity to say exactly what Kimberly just said, regardless of whether that person, I mean, I wouldn't announce it at a meeting level, but I would say to you two privately, oh, person X is having a hard time, could really use a phone call, think they're in some trouble.
Isn't that somewhere in it?
It absolutely is. We didn't mention it, and we need to mention it. So.
Yeah, it used to be in our literature somewhere, if it probably still is, that, you know, it's okay to say Susie Q could use some phone calls. Yeah. Do you think, there's a couple interesting questions here. I think that we've already handled, is it okay to tell somebody that I'm in OA? I think we've done that. Do you think it's better to go to different meetings from the ones your spouse goes to if he or she is in the program? There's an interesting one. Amy, you want to go first?
Sure. And the answer is yes, yes, yes. And but when both we've been in different stages in our lives. So when we came in, we were both, he was in a few years before I was, but initially we were both unattached and then married people, and we could go to any meetings, no problem. And then we had this group of little children, and you can't both go off and, like, buy children. You know, none of you is over five, but we're both going off to a meeting, either together or separately. So that cut the number of our meetings down, and sometimes meant that if we got a babysitter, we went to the same meeting. And now Zoom meetings make it so that we do go to different meetings, but some of the best meetings in our area, we both want to go to. So that is the rub of it. And it just happened to happen, you know, and I've had long conversations with my husband about exactly what I would prefer from him. But my relational issues are not necessarily what needed to be brought here this morning.
Right. Kimberly, any thoughts?
So, yeah, my husband and I go to a lot of the same meetings. No little kids to worry about. We actually met in an OA meeting, but that's a different story for a different day. And with Zoom, we go to a lot of different meetings. But part of that's because, like, I like to go to my old inner group on Monday morning and see my peeps in New York or whatever. But I would say, even if my husband were not in a meeting, and if I were sharing, I'm not going to share about how hurt I am because of something he did. I will always keep in mind that if I can't keep the anonymity of my husband, the person that in theory I love more than anyone in the world, what good is anonymity? So I'm not going to go, if I need to talk about my relationship, I'm going to call my sponsor, or I might call a trusted OA friend, but I'm not going to be saying anything in a meeting that I would would worry about him hearing. That just doesn't feel right. That feels invasive of his space. So same meetings and different meetings is the short version of what I just said.
I think that point, I wouldn't say anything in a meeting that I wouldn't want to get back to him, is probably a very good key for anonymity in general, right? Mm-hmm. Or that I wouldn't want anybody to repeat. You know, there's something, yeah, we can say anything in a meeting we want, but not everybody is as careful about repeating things they've heard as they might be. And just again, a personal note, because I can't stand not to say it. My husband's in another 12-step program, probably one you've never heard of. And I sit here in the room on Tuesday nights when he's in his meeting, and I can hear some of the things that go on, but mostly I can shut it out. But my sponsor told me, you may qualify for that program, but you are not going to those meetings with him. He needs to be somewhere where he can share that stuff, and you need to be in your program. Okay. I've got a question here. I'm not quite sure how to parse this. How to balance anonymity? Well, thank you for such amazing offerings, but how do you balance anonymity with growing really close with some of your fellow members and becoming close personal friends? Is there something in there you can speak to, Amy?
Yeah. So I'm not quite sure exactly, but I think it's perfectly okay for us to like and be closer to some people in the meetings than others, right? We're all equal. We all have value. And yet personal connection may be stronger. And then y'all have the same issues that couples have, where when you come into the meeting, you need to be equal with everybody else in the meeting and not flaunt your special care of one another to the meeting. And be careful in your friendship not to spend too much or any time gossiping, you know, not having an us versus them relationship with meetings. So that would be what I would say.
Kimberly?
So I think it's only natural that there are people in any group that we feel something more in common with than with others. We think the same way. We laugh at the same jokes. We roll our eyes, hopefully inwardly, at the same situation. And we may or may not become friendly. I know, you know, some people who are best friends with other people in OA, and then I just have friendly relationships with some other women in OA. I think we just navigate that the way we would anything, right? It's, I don't think it's a break of anonymity, but I would say if somebody says, I think I said this when I spoke, how do you two know each other? It would either be, you know, we're a member of a book club or a friend of a friend, or, gee, I don't know, I've known her forever. If you ask me about my friend so-and-so, I'm thinking of somebody very specifically. I would just say, gosh, I don't know. I met her when I lived in New York, and I've known her for 30 years, you know?
Yeah. I have a program friend who joined another club I was in. And then when she left OA, she stopped coming to that club, and I called her one day and I said, I want you to know that I love you. She said, well, I'm pursuing some other option. And I said, look, I love you. Please don't let that stop you from participating in that other group, because I want the best for you. And if leaving OA is the best for you,
I knew a woman who used to call us our book club, her book club, and her husband knew that her book club was OA, but nobody else in her family knew that her book club was a 12-step program. And I was in meetings with the woman for years, and she shared about that, like, you know, two or three times over the years. And then sadly, after an illness, she passed away, and a half dozen of us went to her the services for her, and a member of her family got up and talked about how much her book club meant to her. And I thought it was a wonderful way to for the family to recognize an important part of her life while still respecting everyone's anonymity. So it's nice to find a way to talk about it, and yet still, so, I mean, we just never know that anybody's family knows they're in a 12-step program. So we can't risk that, but I like the book club idea.
That is darling. So, and, you know, obviously as a OA couple, we get asked regularly, so where'd you meet? Where'd you meet? And so we often say, you know, the name of the city, you know, oh, we both went to this particular university, which is true, but not at the same time. You know, or we met at church, which is also true.
Yeah.
In the basement. The one thing I will add very quickly is that becoming very good friends with people in OA, when one member leaves, like you were talking about, Melissa, it can be very, very hard to negotiate from a program-based relationship to a one person staying in program and one person not being in program relationship. And so I've done it successfully in a very tiny handful of cases, and then most of them have fallen by the wayside because of the other person, not me.
The last question that we have is interesting, and that is, do you believe it's really possible to be anonymous on Zoom meetings?
So I would say if you have to decide, is Zoom public media or private media? If it's public media, we don't allow our last name to be used or our face to be used. So if you're really concerned about this being public media, then you would come on. You wouldn't show your face and you wouldn't use your last name. And I note that none of us here have our last names. Personally, am comfortable that right now this is private media. You had to register. One had to register for the convention to be here. Yes, in a meeting, there's always the opportunity, sadly, that an intruder could come in. So I personally don't put my phone number on my picture or in chat. Certainly not on my picture. I worry if an intruder came in and did screen grabs. But I am comfortable enough that it's anonymous. And I will say my last name if it's important. But it's just a fine line. And if you're not comfortable with it, then you use a fictitious name and create a great avatar or just put a black screen up or a picture of a flower or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I agree. And the funny thing, I was just typing my phone number into the chat, and I'm going to hit enter now because I'm like, oh, actually, I guess I'm that one level more comfortable. You know, I kind of, like, this is where we begin to talk about the difference between anonymity and privacy. And I personally, like, I remember saying pretty close to 20 years ago, well, we've given up our privacy. And that was a choice. So that is, that's just one of those things where, and so far, and I'm going to superstitiously knock on wood, so far it has not come back to bite me. Could it? Of course. you know, I read stuff, but I am okay with it because cost versus risk. You know, cost benefit, risk, you know, what's the deal? I need to recover. I personally am, you know, careful, very careful because I've had COVID once and I was so sick. Mm-hmm. And my daughter has had COVID twice and she was sicker the second time. So, you know, everybody needs to decide their own cost risk, you know, cost benefit analysis for themselves. I need these programs. I need to be here. I need to be seen as me. So putting up an avatar wouldn't meet that need for me. Now, if it's the only way you can get recovery, hot diggity, good idea. But I am willing to risk possible problems, which I personally have not experienced. And I have experienced intruders, but I personally have not had it come back at me. So.
Yeah, and this actually still scratches that issue. My sponsor has always used her last name in meetings when she introduces herself on Zoom and face-to-face because she said, look, if I can stay so anonymous that nobody can find me when they need help and when I need help.
So I think that's really important. And I almost said I would introduce myself with my first and last name now, but it's going to go on a recording. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not going to do that now, but I don't have a problem telling anybody in a meeting my last name. And I once, a sponsee's mother was in the hospital dying. And I went to the hospital and to be with my sponsee. And I had to rack my brain because you can't find Kimberly with Barbara at the emergency room. They're not going to be able, they're not going to help you with Kimberly. I'm looking for Kimberly who's there with Barbara, right? So I think it's absolutely okay to use my last name. And then I have to decide if I want to do that, if I'm comfortable with that on Zoom, because there is a small risk. I will say when the pandemic hit, I don't know that I would have done as well just by going to phone meetings. I think I think I would multitask all the time on the phone.
I know that that I live in one state for 6 months and another state for the other 6 months, and that I can go to the same meetings because my home group is now in Canada, and I see those same. They know how to get in touch with me, and I know how to get in touch with them. All right. Thank you so much, Amy and Kimberly. This has been a fabulous meeting.